This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
When a men's rights group that works against what it describes as bigotry that is routinely practiced against men and boys in this culture planned its first major conference last spring, protesters, including women's groups, began to call for the cancellation of the event. The idea of men's rights has for some time been a hotly debated concept and has often been seen as a pushback against hard-won rights for women. The entire discussion seems to be a minefield of political, social, economic, and sexual hot buttons. We've convened a men's panel on today's program to speak about current men's issues, from mental health to dealing with domestic violence. We're joined in the studio by Theo Boer, Executive Director of the Nanaimo-based Men's Center, and on the phone by Grant Waldman, Executive Director of the Duncan-based West Coast Men's Support Society, and Jonathan Buchanan, who works with men's support groups in Comox and Courtney.
Welcome to People First Radio. The Associated Press reports that a presentation on domestic violence was given to National Football League owners and executives yesterday, October the 8th, 2014. Deanna Gardner was present. She's the NFL's Director of Player Engagement and Education. Gardner was, according to the Associated Press, encouraged by the reaction and input the presentation received from the owners. They were very engaged, she said. They recognized the importance of this initial education program and that it will set a standard. Theo Boer, what are your thoughts about the NFL domestic violence scandals and the ongoing social responses to those scandals? Has the NFL done enough, and what have you observed?
First of all, thanks, Ashta and Kevin, for having us on the show today. We certainly appreciate it. The whole thing about domestic violence, and I'm going to frame that rather than in the NFL controversy in a much broader sense, the whole thing about domestic violence in our society is really a good news, bad news story in that we have raised as a society a lot of awareness around domestic violence in the last number of decades, and that's a good thing. Unfortunately, what we've done with that awareness is we've taken a very gender-biased point of view. Research clearly indicates that domestic violence is perpetrated equally between men and women. And there seems to be a lot of resistance to that fact. Now, that's research over, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of studies. The other thing that seems to be perpetuating that myth is the media. And we see that with this whole incident in the NFL, where we have a football player who's gone through the court system, suffered the consequences, and then his employer has come along and further sanctioned him. But there's no look at cause and effect in that. If you look at the videotapes, his wife clearly hit him a number of times before he struck her, which doesn't excuse his actions. But there is a cause and effect that we as a society seem to be unwilling to have a look at.
Jonathan Buchanan, what are your thoughts?
I concur with Theo that there is and has always been a gender bias in looking at domestic issues in marriage and in relationships. And I agree that, you know, his was an over-the-top response, and violence relationship needs to be addressed as a whole, not just as a gender, fingering out men. It needs to be addressed as a whole, as a condition that's prevalent in our society now, and it's totally unacceptable in any instance, men or women.
Grant Waldman.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me here today. Yeah, I concur with Theo and Jonathan for sure. Domestic violence is something that we need to prevent rather than respond to. I think there's just millions and millions of dollars being spent on response to domestic violence versus prevention. And I think this situation with the NFL was an opportunity to simply reinforce that, hey, you know, here's another example of a big man lashing out at this defenseless woman, and therefore we need to spend more millions of dollars on responding to these types of incidents versus looking at the whole picture and how can we have a conversation where we can all work together and figure out a better solution.
The Vancouver Sun reported on August the 21st, 2014, that an exhibit called Man Up Against Suicide will soon go on tour as part of the Movember Foundation's unprecedented $12 million Canadian campaign, and that's to strengthen men's mental health, particularly in regard to male suicide and depression. Now, that same article quotes two University of British Columbia professors as saying that the suicide rate for men and boys is four times higher than it is for girls and women, yet few Canadians talk specifically about men's mental health. The professors add that what needs to be overcome is men's reluctance to deal with mental health difficulties. Jonathan Buchanan, tell us more about the issues associated with men and mental health.
Generally speaking, men don't present with that as their primary issue. It's usually something relational, something that has driven them to it, to depression, but they're reluctant to use the word because of the stigma attached to men and mental health issues, and the fact that they're afraid that they'll be judged by that, will become, you know, unemployable, or worst case scenario, could lose contact with their children and the family unit as a whole. So of course they don't come forward, and we need to encourage men too, because let's face it, you know, that's a forever solution to a short-term problem, which when addressed can ultimately be overcome. Depression is possible to overcome depression and turn it for what it is, just an unsettling in your life at that time. And in my experience over the last 17 years in dealing with men and depression and suicide, yeah, the rates are just way too horrendous, simply because they have felt the stigma of not being able to go in and, you know, perhaps with some anonymity, be able to address this issue and have somebody to talk to. So our men's centers are very, very successful in reaching out to men and giving them an option before it reaches that level of it's all or nothing, like this is the only choice left or the only option left.
Grant Waldman, have things changed over time? Are men becoming more willing to speak about feelings and about mental health challenges?
I think, and I agree with what Jonathan said, and I think if men are given the opportunity, if they're given a safe space to express what's going on in their lives, whether it's mental health, physical, etc., then yes, I think that men will certainly talk about what's going on in their lives. The issue is that a lot of men aren't even aware that there are services out there for them, such as our organizations and services that we provide. So this is not only a systemic issue around communicating that these services are available for men, but it's also a sociocultural issue where, you know, where men haven't been raised to even ask for the help in the first place. So, you know, there's a number of factors at play here that need to be really looked at and discussed on a more regular basis.
Theo, what have you observed over the time that you've been working at the Men's Center?
Well, I think one interesting thing that you started this particular segment with was that the suicide rate for men generally is 4-1 versus women. The interesting thing about that is that it's 8-1 for men versus women during separation and divorce, and 12-1 for men over 65 going through separation or divorce. My personal belief system around that is a lot of men have incredible challenges dealing with divorce and separation because they're losing their children in that process. So I think that's a real key that we should be looking at.
While preparing for this interview, I came across what I considered to be an unusual news item in my online research. It really jumped out at me, and I found it yesterday. The TECO Times reported this week that Costa Rica's president has made a promise to a men's rights advocacy group in the country. A new interagency commission will be formed to study the legal imbalances in domestic abuse, custody rights, and child support policy in that country. Now, members of the Foundation to Support Men had been advocating for change and, in fact, had been protesting in front of the president's home for some time, said Costa Rica has adopted several laws to protect women and children from domestic violence to ensure that men are held responsible for child support, but they pointed out that no legislation has been passed to protect men's rights. Grant Waldman, tell us more about the concept of men's rights and why the notion of men's rights is either challenged or largely ignored in our society.
I think that any banner that has, you know, the concept of rights, whether it's women's rights or men's rights, anytime there's the this polarization of groups occurring, that it's going to create tension. You know, I think that there needs to be a balanced approach to dealing with societal issues, whether it's gender-based, et cetera. And, you know, I think hats off to the to what's happening, you know, regarding this article that you spoke of, because I think that there has to be a balanced approach so that all genders are supported and heard, so that there isn't the need for these quote-unquote rights groups to rise up and to speak out.
Jonathan Buchanan, what are your thoughts?
As I said, I agree that there needs to be a separation in the language that we use. In just simply stating it draws a division. So in bringing people together, as I have experienced in the past, especially in couples counseling, is to drop the gender and drop the rights and say, well, we've all inherently got rights in our Charter of Rights from Canada, but we have to drop the rights as far as inflaming other groups to jump on that bandwagon, whether it's, you know, coming forward and saying, well, men have rights there. They have their rights already. They don't need more given to them. But in this case, if we drop the word rights and come back to an actual word of working together cooperatively, you know, and cooperating with each other and finding not rights, but finding the equality that's there and the balance that can be available with a family.
Theo, what are your thoughts?
Well, to be clear, I think that, first of all, the organizations that are represented here today, we're not men's rights organizations. We're service organizations. We provide services for men. I think the men's rights movement, as it's commonly referred to, is really a reaction to mostly fathers being deprived of their children. And that comes through various ways, family court, legislation, men being unfairly branded in the media, looking at television programs. You see a lot of men depicted as buffoons or ridiculous or not very bright. And so there's a lot of aspects to that. But, you know, unfortunately, it's a reaction. And that's how our society works. Change happens when there's pushback.
The University of Toronto's newspaper, it's called The Varsity, reported a year ago in September 2013 about controversy surrounding an event called Why We Need Campus Men's Centers. It was hosted by U of T's Men's Issues Awareness Society and a group called the Canadian Association for Equality. Now, Dr. Miles Groth, he's an American psychology professor, author of a book called Engaging College Men, Discovering What Works, was the keynote speaker for that event. The organizers of the U of T event were reportedly relieved that protesters hadn't come out as they had in large numbers to similar men's issues events the year before. Theo, tell us more about the controversies that surround men's centers on and off campuses, and maybe it's only on campuses that this controversy exists, and why, despite that opposition, there's a sense that the centers are needed.
Well, I think it's a good question, Kevin. The bottom line is that men need help just as much as women need help with various issues. And there are sometimes different issues, and sometimes they overlap. The response or reaction to campus men's centers, which has happened in a number of locations, including Simon Fraser a few years ago, seems to me to be based in a lot of misconceptions. And rather than people asking questions about what's really happening here, it seems that, and again, I point my finger at the media, you know, there isn't the kind of in-depth coverage that helps people understand. The bottom line is that, you know, what we find with our center is that men feel comfortable coming into an environment where They're not threatened. It's not a government office. It's not an institution, but they're accepted and supported rather than challenged. And I think that's an important aspect. Men's centers create a safe environment where men can be supported to be the best that they can be.
Grant Waldman.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I agree with what Theo said, and I also want to add that I think, you know, what came up with when the Simon Fraser concept of a men's center arose, I think there was a big pushback because people were thinking, well, here comes patriarchy again. You know, I think there needs to be a very clear distinguishment between what a men's center is here to accomplish in supporting men versus the concept of patriarchy and power over and that whole idea, and the fact that that men's centers are anything but patriarchy. We are here to support men, you know, in the psychosocial realm of their lives, and to help them. Whereas the whole concept of patriarchy is really about power over, and that's not what men's centers are here for.
Jonathan Buchanan, you provide peer support and counseling, I understand, in the Comox Valley area. What would be the difference then? What would the leap be between providing peer support and counseling and a full-on men's center?
Well, most definitely a walk-in men's center to deal with crisis is needed. Those that are newly experiencing a crisis division or a loss of identity in their lives. Peer support in itself shows that it comes from a strength-based area. This is their peers that have generally experienced the same circumstances in their lives around divorce and separation and access with their children, and as well as around depression, loss of job, and so on. So the peers can really work together to remove the stigmas of you appear to be less than as a man because you're failing at this, and they allow the men to heal together. And then those that do have underlying issues that maybe stem back from childhood or circumstances that are just a little too deep and daunting to open up in front of a group, well, they would then benefit from one-on-one counseling to better understand their own situation, as well as to help connect them to feel more open with maybe perhaps later on sharing that in group. And those are the difference between the two. So there's a real need that has shown itself over the 12 years that I've instrumented this program alone up in the Comox Valley. There's been a real need for a center where they can come in and feel this is non-bias. They're not being judged, as Theo was putting out, and they feel safe in that environment to share these issues because they know they're not going to be perceived as weak because of them.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, Theo, and
You're
Grant
welcome.
For taking the time to join us today. It was much appreciated, and it's clear we'll have to revisit some of these issues again in the future.
Thanks Kevin and Ashta.
Thank you.
Theo Boer is executive director of the Nanaimo-based Men's Center. You can find them online at themenscenter.ca. Grant Waldman is executive director of West Coast Men's Support Society, located in Duncan. You can find them online at westcoastmen.org. And Jonathan Buchanan offers men's peer support in the Comox Valley.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.